Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Stories are an important part of our Native cultures. For many, they tell the history and origins of their tribes. Stories also open up a world of entertainment while teaching us lessons. Today, we'll hear several stories, including a view into Tlingit culture. What role do stories play in your Native nation? Is there a story you heard growing up that you are now telling your children or maybe even your grandchildren? Stay with us as we open our hour to Native Stories, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Free clinics for pets were recently held in two Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta communities. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports on the visits by the Fairbanks-based nonprofit Alaska Native Rural Veterinary.
Veterinarian Paula Gibson is giving a shot to her first patient of the day, a small mixed breed named Roxy.
It'll be easier if you go sleep.
Yeah.
Back in there for a little bit.
Gibson is in Congegonek to spay, neuter, vaccinate, and deworm as many dogs as she can in a marathon day. This December morning, her mobile surgical unit is set up in a wide hallway at the community laundromat with a window overlooking the ocean. In modern times, rural Western Alaska villages have struggled with loose dog populations. It's not uncommon in some villages to pay young people a bounty of $10 or $20 per dog when things get out of control. Health experts say overpopulation creates the potential for hungry and aggressive dogs and can lead to bites and, in some cases, maulings. In the lobby with about 10 others was Leanne Miller and her small, gold-coated Scarlet, age 2. She knew something was up.
Maybe she's excited and scared and nervous at the same time.
Joe Joseph is president of the Congegonek Tribal Council, which hosted the clinic in their building. He says the village dog control efforts are only a temporary fix.
But this one that they have right now, neutering dogs, fixing them up, it's going to help us a lot. And I'm glad they're doing that. For the safety of our kids, for the safety of our elders.
Gibson, who also works with Christian Veterinary Mission, says every dog counts.
It may sound like we're not doing enough when you look at the actual numbers of animals, but then when you break it down into how many puppies one dog can have or one male dog can father, we're at least stopping that much.
The team sterilized 38 dogs during their visit to two communities, which in a few months can expect fewer puppy litters and hopefully fewer problem dogs. For National Native News, I'm Ben Matheson in Congegonek.
A suicide prevention program called PC Cares has been funded for 2 years. The program is designed specifically for Alaska Native people living in Western Alaska. The rate of suicide there is almost 18 times higher than the national average, says Lisa Wexler, lead researcher from the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
What works in the lower 48 doesn't necessarily match up with what people want, need, and feel is meaningful in Alaska Native villages.
The program incorporates cultural and local knowledge with clinical research to help prevent suicide. It's based on building relationships with clinics, community, and families to create a strong foundation for those who are vulnerable, says Wexler.
We really wanted to think about that person within a family system and within a community system, and how can we build a strong system around them.
Wexler says local leaders and counselors helped create the program because they know the community. She hopes it will build support for people who are dealing with suicidal thoughts, and she encourages anyone with those thoughts to seek help. The Jicarilla Apache Nation announced this week it reached a gaming agreement with the state of New Mexico to ensure its Class 3 gaming operations remain open through 2037. The tribe says gaming helps with jobs and the economy. The agreement still needs to be approved by the state legislature and the Interior Department. The Navajo Nation also approved a gaming compact with the state. Both tribes say the compacts come after much negotiations and includes revenue sharing. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 26th in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kawanak's news programming. Learn more at knba.org.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we are bringing you a treat. Perhaps it's something you've been waiting for. Well, we're opening up our electronic talking circle today to a few Native stories. So get your cup of hot tea, put your feet up, and get ready. We've invited a couple of Native storytellers to the hour today, and as you take in these stories, you're also welcome to share your thoughts about the lessons each of these stories have. And you can reach us at 1-800-996-2848, or you can post your thoughts on our Facebook or Twitter. Our Twitter handle is 1-800-99-NATIVE. Well, let's go ahead and start our story circle today. We have our first storyteller on the line. I'd like to welcome Native scholar Ishmael Hope, and he is connecting to us from Juneau, Alaska today. And he is Tlingit and Inupiaq, and he's a storyteller. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Ishmael.
Hello, Tara. Thanks so much for having me. Gunashkish.
Ishmael, thank you for spending, you know, the kickoff of winter with us. And we've been looking forward to you sharing some of your culture with us today. Ishmael, we are all ears. Go ahead and take us into your story.
Gunashkish, Achtusake. Yai hu kaaye. Kakwesnik. Togu kwan kidat. Hello, it just feels so good to be sitting among you. Now I'm going to talk to you about one of my elders, and he was just one of the most giving, treasured elders that I think in all of the indigenous world, and particularly known in his Tlingit community. This was Cyril George. His Tlingit name was Kaskau. And I'm thinking about the winter. That's why I want to tell about him. I think about the nature of giving, the holiday season, Christmas. And I think about our kuik, our ceremonial tradition. That's what we did in the fall and the winter. That was our giving tradition. That is our giving tradition, combined with Christmas. And Cyril, he was one of the most giving, generous, courteous, loving people I've ever known. And he was trained to be a clan leader, trained to be a tradition bearer, a master tradition bearer. He would sit me in his home, and we'd be having dried fish with seal grease and putting salt on it. And he'd sit me down, and he'd be telling me stories. And so these are some of these little stories that he told me. When he was first born, there was his clan uncle, Willis Peters, that came from Sitka, all the way from Sitka to Hood Bay, where he was born, and he talked to his mom, Hihi. And one thing that he said was, Kauk Aksha, is that a little man? Is that a boy? His mom said, ah, yes. Achtuak Sigu. I would like to give him my name so that he could stand among noble people. And so that's what he did. He gave him the name of Kaskau. He went on to receive many other names, as an honorable Tlingit elder would receive throughout the Kuik tradition. And so just from that beginning, he was trained to be a leader, a clan leader. And later on in life, his uncle, another one of his uncles, Robert Zuboff, who became the clan leader of his clan, Hukwedi. See, he's not my clan, but I tell about Cyril. I don't tell his clan history. I talk about the joy of being among him and hearing his little stories, he liked to call them. See, he, later in life, when Robert Zuboff passed, and his Tlingit name was Shadak, he was one of the absolute greatest. See, when I think about these storytellers, they were Shakespeare and Homer and Sophocles. They really were that good. And there was a spiritual dimension to the stories as well. But when Robert Zuboff passed, some of the great elders of Angoon, the powerful elders, Cyril named some of them, Sam Johnson, Jimmy Johnson, William Nelson, Paul James. Some of their stories are still documented, and we study them, and they were just master tradition bearers themselves. Sam Johnson, Yeshnau, I believe was his name. They all sat him down, Cyril, and they said, Sam said, "You think you're man enough to take your uncle's place?" Just like that. That's what Cyril said, just like that. And so that's what Cyril did. He took his uncle's place, Robert Zuboff, Shadak. And he said he wasn't like some of those other clan leaders where he said their word was law. And Cyril, though, from knowing him, from being around him, from learning from him, he was just as honorable, just as noble as any of those elders. One time he sat with, a lot of times he would bring out, he would go out to the Gasno Elementary School right across from his apartment in Douglas. And he talked to the children and he said, "How many of you have something that you really love?" And they'd all raise their hand real excited. And then he said, "And you take real good care of it, don't you?" And they nodded. They nodded yes. And he said, "Well, if you listen to your parents, obey your parents, obey your teachers. If you listen closely and do what you're supposed to do, and you stick with it, one day you're going to say to yourself, 'Gee, I'm pretty special.' And on that day, you won't need anyone to tell you what to do anymore. You'll already know." That was the kind of training that Cyril George received. And the last little story that I'm going to tell you about Cyril. You know, I learned these stories. He told me these many times, and he also really highly valued documenting these stories. And so I work at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and in the archives, a lot of his stories remain, and it just helps so much to go back to those stories, to keep his memory and his spirit alive in our hearts and minds. And Kathy Ruddy was a super close friend with Cyril. She just made a major donation for our new building, the Walter Soboloff Center. And he's going to be remembered. He's going to be remembered. That's the important thing. So this last story, Andrew Gamble, Anya, told him. Anya, one of the elders of Angoon. And so he said, "The people, your people, they came from the interior, Dakka, from the interior. And they used to travel down, they would travel, walk down to Klukwan. They'd walk down to Klukwan, and then one of these older men, he came down, it was about 200 miles. And as he comes down, he's in the middle of the town. And then there's another man who recognizes him. He goes up to him, and he claps his hand, and he says, 'Oh,
Now say a ha'i a good day, aya. You walk from a long way. Ne stecha na'a. Come home with me. A kukwas I. I'm gonna cook. Shkagach to snake. We'll tell stories. Gakesh sa. You're gonna rest. Relax. After a while, this man who came from the interior, he's very carefully putting his hand under the spoon of the hot soup that they're having. And then the man says, hey, you don't need to do that. You're going to burn your hand. Trick! No, he said. Tresach toa ushku cha'akade awane itusa arne. I don't want any of your kindness to fall on the floor. That's the kind of courtesy and respect that Cyril lived his whole life. And he said, now that's a thank you. And you know, that's how I feel being able to tell the memories, talk a little bit about the memories of this elder that I dearly loved, Cyril George. Haskavu. That's how I feel. Gunachish achet yisa'ahe. Thank you so much for listening to me.
Ishmael, we do appreciate you sharing with us today. And we are sharing stories. As you just heard, we connected with Alaska Native heritage there and some of the great names that have come throughout the communities there. Today, we are live here in Studio 49, and we're going to be packing the hour with as many stories as we can. And again, we just heard from Ishmael Hope on the line with us today. We're going to keep the stories rolling out of Studio 49 today. This time, we are going to bring it back to the Southwest. Right here in Studio 49 with us is Bernice Muskrat, and she is the language coordinator for the Jicarilla Apache Cultural Center, and she is also a lawyer, grandmother of nine, and mother of four children. And Bernice is Jicarilla Apache and Navajo. Welcome to Native America Calling, Bernice.
Thank you.
And Bernice, let's go ahead and jump straight into the story. I know you got some good stuff for us. And again, if you want to share your thoughts, you can send us an email. Send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Bernice, go ahead and take us back into the stories.
This story is about my life with my grandparents, Juan and Juana. I grew up on Horse Lake Mesa. And every morning my grandfather would get up and he would tell a story, and he would tell the story to my grandmother. But mostly they did this for their benefit because we have an oral history. And as a child, I listened as the warm wood stove burned on Horse Lake Mesa. I could see the sunlight coming through the cracks of the log cabin that we lived in. And one of the stories that Grandpa used to tell, he would say, I'm going to tell you a story about language, the origin of language. They would repeat that. It started out four Kusharis were dancing on the precipice of the universe. And the Creator said, I'm going to give you the very special gift of language, but I want you to understand that the gift of language is a very powerful tool. Whatever you think and say shall become, and it shall become your reality. And it shall be the basis of all prayers that you perform for self-empowerment. So this is what happened. The first Kwashari, we call Chanshjeni, they had, in the first beginning of the earth, they had no bodies. They had no physical bodies. They had no physical dimension. They were only... they only existed in sort of a translucent existence. And what happened, he told them, he said, the first Kushari was just like standing there thinking about something and he wasn't paying attention to the lesson that the Creator gave him. And the first thing he thought was, he said, Ntnpi. That's a homonym for, in Apache, Ntnpi. That means, let's sit down, or it also means deer. So what happened is the moment he thought, all the Kusharis turned into deer. And then the second Kushari, Josh Jenny, he said, that means it's a homonym for gum and for sleeping, taking time to rest. So they all went to sleep. So the third Kushari said, nating kai, you know, that means we're all dumb. You know, we're just not catching on. And so they turned into, it also means low IQ or 24 people. So 24 of them appeared. And the fourth one said, nating kai, that means let's roam na kai. It also means Spaniards, because they used to call them the roaming ones. But anyway, so then the creator said, you know, I think you missed the point. That's the language. What you think becomes your reality. You become as you think. So this becomes the basis of a mental ceremony for restoring mental health and for restoring your balance with the universe and for balancing your energy cells. So they decided they were going to restore the intended universe that the creator gave them. So they started a ceremony. So then the first thing that they did was they decided that they learned the lesson that whatever you do becomes what you want it to become. And so they were having a trouble by not being able to understand that, you know, they had this internal dialogue that was sort of dominating their thinking. And so they decided that they were going to invent some rituals to start some self-empowerment to change. And one of the first things they thought about was that time and energy are the forces that govern the human body. So then they started performing a ceremony. And this goes through many, many phases of rituals and ceremonies. And then when the performance of when the ceremonies are actually performed, they start by performing the rituals. But these symbols recognize or trigger in the mind of the person who performs these rituals certain basic ideas. And one of the things that the Hickory Apache people do or used to do is they empower their children to understand themselves and that they have a control over, not control, but they, if their life is synchronized with the universal order, that peace and harmony just happens. And they taught this to us through storytelling, like the story I told you. I translated a lot of it because in the native tongue, there's a lot of things that the deep structure of the culture is not revealed through a translation to the English language. And these are many ceremonies. And, for example, in the area of the moon ceremony, where people synchronize the human body with the universal order, they say that the universal order and the cells in the human body are healed through that resynchronization. So they perform a ceremony and it starts at sunrise. It starts at sunset. When the sun sets, and then the new beginning starts when the sun rises, and they all walk out and perform ceremony. So this is appropriate for New Year's. If you can get out in the sunrise and meet the sunrise just one day out of this new year, you can understand what the Hickory Apache culture is about. Thank you very much. Appreciate this.
And Bernice, thank you as well for sharing, you know, part of your culture too. The stories that we are kicking off the hour today are ones that I think, you know, many of us can relate to of, you know, hearing that purpose and exactly how it connects to us as Native people. And Bernice, you know, why is it important to make sure that, you know, even if we have just 5 minutes to tell a story or spend that time with our loved ones, that we do take the time to share some of this.
It's called empowerment. When you're a child, your grandparents are your social conscience. They're also your source of mental health. And they teach you through these stories to love yourself, and they show you how to do it by what you think and who you are. You send out your life history is in your power to make it the best that it can be.
Some good stuff here, and we appreciate you sharing. Let's also bring Ishmael back into the conversation. Again, if you just tuned in today, you've reached Native America Calling, and we are sharing stories of culture. There is more ahead. And again, if you want to send us a tweet and tell us about how the impact stories have had on your life, you can reach us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Ishmael, also wanted to give you a moment to share some of the stories that you brought to our hour are reminding us of great people in our community. And why is it important to also remember those stories?
Well, something that Cyril frequently said, Cyril George, whose stories I told earlier, he said, there is a spirit in everything. And really that's, so it's when we tell some these good stories, it's like we're feeding on it. We're feeding ourselves. We're nourishing ourselves. In a science may not be able to answer all those exactly what's going on, but we know it. We're feeding our body, our spirit. And I felt that most directly around Cyril, because there was a direct path from his heart to the people he cared for, and he cared for hundreds and hundreds of people. And people felt that. They felt that in themselves, that his heart was nourishing you as you were around him. And so those stories are like little pockets, little containers of that nourishment that go back to the ancestors and also connect with Cyril himself. It's like a little part of himself is still with us, especially the more clearly we try to remember him.
Thanks, Ishmael. And we are about to go to break here. And Bernice, any greetings you want to send out to your community there in Jicarilla, feel free to do it in your language too.
That means greetings, my people. May you have good fortune and may you always have a good outlook on life.
And we're going to continue connecting with Native America. We're sending out good thoughts from Studio 49 today. And stories are going to be coming up after the break. Again, if there is a way that you connect to stories, you can tell us about it. We're live here in Studio 49. And if you've never tried it, try Facebook. You can post your thoughts there or you can send us a tweet. If you just got a new Twitter account, that was part of your resolution to start social media, send us a tweet. We will be right back after this short break. Every year, many of us make resolutions to make major changes in our lives. Some may choose to get in shape and lose weight. Others may want to get their finances in order, or maybe even finally quit smoking. What's your take on New Year's resolutions? Do you make them? And just how do you keep them? Tell us about it on the next Native America Calling.
Hey,
Kiwanek Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction taking place on February 26, 2015 in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event includes unique artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute art, reserve a table, or sponsorship, learn more at knba.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News Programming.
Welcome back. You've connected to Native America Calling, and I'm Tara Gatewood from Mislata Pueblo. And today, we're sharing Native stories with you, and we've packed the hour with some stories. You can also share your story with us, too. You can send us your thoughts on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. We got a new face there. You can make comments on today's show as well. Or you can shoot us an email at comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can also reach us on social media on Facebook or Twitter. Our Twitter handle is 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're now going to go ahead and turn to an album that features Native stories by Mandan Hidatsa storyteller Keith Bear. It's titled Turtle and Pretty Crane from his CD collection of stories called Morning Star Whispered.
They say that from the south, these people came. And they came from all directions in those days. They came to the river here. They came to see the Nuwata, the Hidatsa. The Sanish, they were on the other side of the river. They were told to stay there. But today they live among us, and marry among us. And those are our relatives. Banded together for strength. You see, we were very powerful people. And the land gave us everything. And so we say thank you every morning to the star who leads Grandfather's sun up. We say in the evening. And we watch these stars if we look, stand in the center of the rocks. There are places where they have rocks in a great circle. And if we look and we see the stars lined up, then we know it's time for this. And if we see the stars are lined up with that rock, and then we know that soon it's going to be falling leaves. And if we watch the rocks and see the stars, then we know pretty soon that the snow is coming. We can tell all these things by the rocks here on Earth and the stars above, because, you know, from those stars above, when they look at us, we're a star to them too. And that's how it was. You see, the people, they came riding this one time. Came up from the south, and they had a lot of horses with them. And as they were coming in, they were singing a welcome song. The scouts had already said, they're arriving, they're bringing the Tsushka, the horses. And so as they were coming into camp, they were all singing, and geez, that boy was sitting up on those rocks and watching from the lodge. And a little bit farther out, geez, it was a beautiful, beautiful voice. And when he looked, there was a beautiful woman singing that. And so he kind of made his way around camp, you know, because he was raised by his grandparents. They didn't have very much. His father was killed in a war against an enemy. His mother had been lost to sickness in the winter. And so he was raised by his grandparents. They didn't have too much, but they were very kind and very thoughtful. And they told him the songs, and they told him the ways, and they showed him all the things that he needed to do to be a good young man. And people respected him, because he was very generous with his hunting. He was very generous with his bow. He was very brave to stand before the enemy on a couple of occasions. And here now, he was looking here, looking at this beautiful young woman, and he wanted to get to know her, and he didn't know how to approach her because he didn't have very much. Some of those other young men, they saw her, and they had fine horses, and they had fine robes, and they had all of these things, and they would go all standing in front of her, all bare, greased up, just shiny, you know. Paint on, hair this way. Geez, they're all just looking at each other. Geez, what are you staring at? You with your old big look like grapes hanging off. You got ticks on you so thick. Ah, look at you with your big bushy buffalo hair over there. Look at you with your split toes coming right through your moccasins. Oh, man, you look like a buffalo. You smell like coyote. Geez, they were just teasing each other. Because if you can get one of them mad, you know, that shows that his spirit's not very strong. And you don't want that kind of a man, you know. So if they could really just tear each other up and still smile, you know, just underneath they're just fuming, you know, but on the top they're just trying to be all just so, you know, so stoic and so powerful. You know, nothing bothers me, but boy, underneath there, thinking if I catch you outside in the dark, well, you're really going to get it. But I'm standing in front of that girl, and hey, it's all right. But he didn't have anything, so he kind of stayed back. That one morning, he went down, he was kind of got up early, he was thinking about her, and he went to a favorite place to wash, and he was going to go on that log, and when he looked there on the end of that log, that girl was sitting there washing her hair. She had her back to him. Hey, she was pretty. The sun was just barely coming up, and the yellow on the water and the green from the grass and the light blue in the sky. Man, his heart was just pounding. He couldn't hardly breathe. He looked up and he saw the stars. He said, morning star, he said, as you go across, he said, whisper in your ear that I'm here. And he thought he would be tricky, so he took a stick and he lifted her moccasin that was laying there on the shore, and he pulled it back into the weeds with him. Thought he would get to talk to her like this. And when she dried her hair and she came back along the log, she was going to put her shoes on, and one moccasin was missing. She said, okay, brother, she said, who's got my moccasin? Who's got my shoe? And geez, that guy got him, brothers. And he really got low because on both sides of him now, a little bit farther away, and the willows, two of her brothers stood up, and they were big guys. Oh, what do you mean, took your moccasin? He said, we didn't take your moccasin. Ah, one of you guys did look. She said, I can see where the strings drag into the grass there. So when he looked and they followed that string into the grass and they saw him laying there, boy, they just beat him bad. What are you doing looking at our sister washing herself? No, it's not like that, he said. I just came to talk to her. You have no right to be here, boy. They just tuned him up pretty good. And he was all embarrassed because this is his home, you know. Already people thought him kind of pitiful, and geez, now he just got beat up by these new people. And so to hide his shame, he grabbed his bow and he took his own pitiful horse and he rode off into the prairies. While he was out there in the prairies, he had bad dreams. In that dream, he saw a warrior flying. In that dream, he saw another one laying under a horse. In that dream, he saw a boat spinning wildly, rocking. When he woke up in the morning, he went one more time. He came to a stream there. That river was just not too wide, but it was a little ways across, and the buffalo were thick. A whole day's worth he sat there and he waited, and finally one of them didn't make it and kind of floated down his way. So he took that, the life of that buffalo. And then he got up farther and he got another buffalo, those that were at the end of the herd and weakened. He got another buffalo and he took all this meat and he put it inside those boats, and he took his horse and he tied his horse and he let that horse go because it would go home. He put those bull boats in the water and he followed them. He floated them down the river, and when they came back to the village, the people were there washing themselves and the women and the children were playing there. And he said, oh, he said, here I am. He said, come and help yourselves, he said. And so all the people that came over and they grabbed those pieces of buffalo meat out of there. Oh, geez, you're so nice. Oh, turtle is so good of you. Geez, they all helping themselves. And I saw that girl, and you know, she came over there, and he said, this is for you, he said. He gave her that buffalo heart. She says, is this the only heart you have for me? He just kind of got all shy and embarrassed, and he didn't know what to say, and he put his head down. She said, you should come and see me. I like you, she said. He couldn't even look at her. Boy, he wanted to say something, but his tongue was just thick, and his eyes were just, and his mind was like a cloud, you know. Oh, he just love struck. She walked away from him. He went over there again and he got his flute, told his grandfather about this thing. He said, you know, those are magic, he said. So you take that flute, he said, and you ask it to sing for you. That magic branch, that sacred branch that sings, he said, is given to them. And so he took that flute and he went up on the hill, and there in the nighttime, he saw the star going across fast. And it went right towards her camp. And he says, yes, that's the one that I want, he said. And he sat up there all night and he thought about her. And when the morning came, he went down near her lodge. And so he was standing there waiting. And when she came out, he offered her a sweetgrass bracelet. And then he started thinking. This is how I feel, he said. And early that evening, the stars were just coming out. He stood up there near the thumb thicket, just above them, and he saw her. He said to the wind, "All through the night I have dreamed of you. All through the night you have been my dream. I awoke this morning and I sat on a hill and I waited for you to bring sunlight into the day. I twisted sweet grass with the flowers that grow there. I took this to you, and when you came from your lodge and you stepped upon the earth, the sun began to shine and the birds began to sing. The butterflies began to dance and my heart began to pound," he said. "I wanted to say good things to you, but my mind was a cloud. My tongue was too thick. I offered you that bracelet, and you took it from my hand. As you walked past, I said, 'There goes the light of my life. There goes the source of my desire. There goes the woman of my dreams. And all through the night, I have dreamed of you. And all through the night, you shall be my dream.'" And he took that flute, and he played that song.
And we're listening to the story of Turtle and Pretty Crane by Keith Bear. And this type of story, if this is the type of story you enjoy listening to, tell us why. Visit us on our new website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, and leave your reply. You can also connect with us via email. Our address is comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Let's go ahead and jump back into Keith Bear's story. Here's more of Turtle and Pretty Crane.
When he played the song for her, all the people, they stood and they listened. They stopped whatever they were doing and they listened to this beautiful song. The brothers, they didn't want anything to do with him. And so this young man, he went to them. And he saw the first one standing by the horses there. And as he was watching, that guy was making some bad trades with the people. And so he went to him and he said, "Do you remember who I am?" He said, "Yeah, you're the one who sneaks through the grass," he said. He said, "Yes." He said, "Now there's one of me and there's one of you," he said. And he really popped him a good one, knocked him down, landed him right in that horse's pee, where that horse peed. And he was breathing, bubbles was kind of going there. Geez, he was just out cold. Then he walked and went over to the next one. And as he was getting over there, then here they were gambling. They were playing the stick game. And as they were gambling, that drum was just going fast, beating fast. Boy, it was really singing. But he noticed as he was coming up that man, he had that piece of stick and it was stuck in his belt. And here all that time, he'd been cheating him. And so when he grabbed him, he said, "Hey," he said, "do you remember me?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "You're the one who likes to look at my sister," he said, "when she's bathing." He said, "Well, there's only one of you and there's one of me," he said. And he grabbed him by the hair and he pulled him up and he really popped him a good one. When he did, geez, he just kind of went backwards. His legs went up with that and here that stick fell out. And everybody said, "Look, he's been cheating us." Oh, geez, and he really got a beating from the rest of them. About that time, they could hear the thunder of hoofbeats. And when he turned, here come that third brother. He said, "Ah," he said, "you attacked my brother." He said, "I am not afraid of you, boy." He came riding at him and the young man stood his ground. He stepped to the side, he took his knife, and he cut that warrior's leg, and he cut part of that horse, and then the warrior came at him once again. This time when he went by, he grabbed a hold of his leg, and he just jerked him really hard and just flipped him off that horse, and there was a loud pop and a scream that just sounded like a little girl, and he just almost tore his leg off of him. And the people came and said, "What happened?" He said, "They beat me," he said. "They beat me all together," he said, "but now I have got them back one by one," he said. So the people said, "Look, you know, they cheated us at horse dealing. They cheated us at these games." He said, "Now he tried to run you down on horseback and he's causing disharmony. You might have to ask them to leave." So they went back to their camps carrying that one brother, other two barely staggering coming out of it. And they went back to their lodge. That night there was a great gathering. All the people said, "Look at this young man. He's a good young man. He could have done this and he could have done that, but with honor, he stood up for himself. He stood up for his family." And so early again, next morning, he went down there and he was going to go by that camp of that girl. And the people were offering them gifts that night to remind them that they should be humble in their ways. And remind them that they weren't quite as welcome as they were. But, you know, since they were new and far away from home, we didn't want to just kick them out. So they kind of chewed them out a little bit, but still gave them gifts to remember their time among the Nuwata people. In the morning, he went down there and he took his flute, and again he was standing there. And he was thinking to that girl. He said, I know she's in there. And so he waited and he waited. Then he started singing a song. He started playing that song. And pretty soon from the trees along the river there came this boy and this girl. He said, his name was Eagle from the North. He said, Eagle from the North. He said, hey, he said, brother. He said, Maduk, he said, what are you doing? He said, are you singing to that old lady? He said, ah, I ain't singing to that old lady. I'm singing to that girl. He said, well, that girl, she's gone. Her and her father took horses early. He said, and the brothers, they're the only ones here with that old lady, so that must be who you're singing to, huh? Gee, no, no, Jesus. That girl's auntie was really homely, boy. She was really, so they were kind of teasing the heck out of him. So he waited, and sure enough, that lady came out. You boys get this bull boat ready and do this and do that. And here, the people gave him bull boat to take and drag that boy because, you know, his leg was all messed up and the other one was kind of lumped up too. So rather than drag him across country, they're going to take him on that travoy, take him home that way. And as they were traveling, they got in that boat, and those guys didn't know how to paddle that boat. It's not like a white man's boat where you kind of push it this way and push it that way and you kind of go, because these are round. You just spin in a circle. So, geez, there was a lot of circling going on. That old lady was screaming, hey, don't you know how to do this? What's the matter with you? A woman's supposed to do this anyway. Well, you boys are strong. Geez, so they both grabbed a paddle. And, geez, that looked like the most pitiful turtle just barely going down the river this way and that way. That bull boat was spinning. That boy was screaming and hollering in the bottom. So that boy, he grabbed his stuff later on and he followed the trail of those people. It took him a whole 2 days, 3 days, and then the storm came and it almost washed away their tracks, and he went to the deadfall of the trees there because he didn't have much. And when he went inside there, there was a place under the branches. And it wasn't too bad, so he laid upon one log so he didn't lay in the mud. And his horse stood there beside him. Through the night, he had a dream, and he was thinking about how soft and warm that would be to just be close to that girl and maybe kiss her. And, oh, it just felt like a nice, warm kiss. And when he opened his eyes here, that horse was kind of rubbing against his face. Oh, geez, he started spitting. Did he kiss that horse? Oh, man, he started wondering what was going on. So then he got worried and he took off. He found their trail again, and he got close, and he found this bag laying on the ground. When he opened that bag, then there was some wasna in there, some pounded meat and berries, and it wasn't too bad. You know, he took a little bit. And there was some bitter in there, too. He never had that before, but he wasn't too hungry. He was chasing that girl, so he followed him. I think it was about the seventh night, this. When he came to the river, and he made a small fire down below where they couldn't see from above on the benches. He was near the water, and he heard something. So when he turned around, look, there was a great big bear. And it came down. He had his bow in his hand. He said, brother, he said, don't make me hurt you. I'm here because I need your help. He said, you have medicine for man and woman. He said, help me out at this time. He said, and that bear growled and talked to him, waved his arms and waved to the south. And that bear dropped down and turned and walked away. And that boy was so scared. Geez, his knees were just shaking. He buckled me. Fell to the ground. Oh, man, he was just frightened. Next morning, he got up early and took off again. He saw them people. So he made camp, and he went down below, and he saw that girl going down after water. So again, he crawled through the grass, and when he got close to her, he reached out and he touched her. Hey, he said, do you remember me? And she looked down. She saw him laying in the grass. She picked up, well, what are you doing here? She was standing on that one foot. He said, I've come to see you, he says. I looked at that girl. You better go back, she said. My brothers will kill you. He said, I don't care, he said. I'm going to make you my wife. And so she went back up there to camp. I'll meet you later, she said. And so later on, after the brothers were fed and that sickly brother was taken care of, she went back down along the bench that she was going to dig some tubers and some roots and things. So the brothers, they went up into the hills to hunt for deer. As she was down there along the bottom, the turtle, he came along. He saw her, and they sat there below the cut bank. They were laughing and talking, and the shadows were growing longer, going across the east side. The shadows were just near the riverbank when they first got there on this side. And Pretty soon they were there so long, their shadows almost reached the other side. I should go now, she said. I'm getting hungry. He said, here, have some of this. And he took that bag of that wasna. She said, where'd you get that bag? Here, that's my auntie's bag. I found this on the trail, he said. Oh, boy, she opened it up, and geez, that wasna was, oh, she makes the best wasna. Boy, she started eating handfuls of it. Here, have some. He just took a little bit, and his heart was just full of hers. And they sat there, and they talked for a while. Pretty soon, she kind of didn't feel too good. And pretty soon, she put her hand to her head and wiped away the sweat. Pretty soon, she started holding her stomach. She said, I got to go home, she said. He said, what's the matter? He said, I don't know. I'm not feeling good, she said. She started getting up to go, and she collapsed. He didn't know what to do, so he picked her up in his arms, and he walked right to that camp. The brother saw him coming. What did you do? Did you take her life? You have no business here, boy. They were going to beat him again. And the father said, what's the matter? What's the matter? He said, I followed, he said. I wanted to be with her. He said, and we were talking. And then she became ill, and I couldn't leave her there. I want to bring her here, so maybe you'll have medicine here that you can give to her. Maybe you have different ways among your people. And then the aunt saw that bag, and she said, where did you get that? She said, well, this is what we were sharing. No, no, no. She said, that's not for her. That was for you, she said. And the father said, what do you mean? She said, there's bad medicine, and I knew he was coming. She said, I saw it in a dream, and I gave this to him, and she wasn't supposed to eat it. And he said, what did you do? She said, that's not a good thing, she said. And here, during the night, that young girl lost her life. The father was very angry, and he got mad at his sister, and he said, you take him back. So they had to load that boy up, and he started getting sick, too, over the night. By morning, he could hardly move, and they loaded him on that driveway, and they took him back as fast as they could. They crossed the waters, and they got back to the man, then the newest of people, and they took him, and they showed him what he had been eating, and they took the medicine man, and they came, and they sang songs, and they gave him some good roots, and they gave him some good herbs, and over 3 nights that he was very, very sick. And some people say that there was things crawled out of him. Some people say that it was a terrible smell that came out of him. Everybody knows about these bad medicine ways, but nobody likes to talk about those things because we like to live in harmony. And so that young man, he turned into an old man over time. And so they say that sometimes if you go down there near the river, they still live there. Because if you look in the spring, you see that pretty girl. She's standing there on one leg. Maybe she'd be looking down in the weeds, looking and talking to a turtle. Pretty clean and turtle. They were here along this river a long time ago. They lived in harmony. And sometimes they say that if you look up in the sky, you can see how true their love was. Because their love was put up there in the sky. And it's that one red star comes by every now and then. If you look now, I think that red star is over to the west a little bit. I think they call that star Mars now. The red heart star. And that's the story of those two.
And that was Keith Bear telling the story of Turtle and Pretty Crane, a love story from the Mandan Hidatsa Nation. And we appreciate that recording that we were able to play with you, or to play for you. And also want to bring back our storytellers here in Studio 49 with us. We have Bernice Muskrat also on the line up in Alaska. We have Ishmael Hope. I want to go ahead and welcome them back into the hour. And any thoughts, you know, just hearing that story, that there was a lot going on, many lessons that we can take away from that story as well. Bernice, go ahead and start us off. Any thoughts you have about what you just heard?
Well, I like the story because it has a lot of visual imagery that goes with it. And the deep structure of culture comes through visual imagery. So I really enjoyed the story.
Thanks. Ishmael, any initial thoughts?
Yeah, a good storyteller, they could take you through, just as Bernice said. They think in complex visual imagery, and that's really what brings out great indigenous storytelling. less the play that of language that you may get in English or Shakespeare, more it takes you into the vision of the story. You follow it.
And, you know, there were moments in that story where you could kind of relate to just even the way, you know, he was funning around and, you know, throwing some of those words in there. As storytellers, you know, how important is it to make sure that, you know, you don't just get into this far off space where the story is coming out, that, you know, you kind of keep it local? Bernice?
Well, there's a lot of experiences that he expresses, like, you know, they're kidding around, they're teasing. You know, teasing is a real important function in culture. It tells you, you know, that you're displaying some of your baser instincts and you know, it's okay.
It's okay to be human.
Right.
Ishmael, any thoughts?
Well, that style, that almost casual style, it's not really casual, though, because the structure in that story is just really right on as far as good Native storytelling goes. But that part of it is just being able to just talk with people. It's not like you're going, oh, I'm going into sacred land, you know, this idea of sacred. It's sacred even if it's local, even if it seems casual, and it just, there's little jokes in there.
Well, we have definitely enjoyed the hour. I want to thank both of you for sharing with us today, Ishmael Hope and Bernice Muskrat. Also, big ups to Keith Bear for sharing that story through his album. And that's going to do it for today's program. I hope you enjoyed the stories. And next week, we'll be back again. We're going to kick off with a look at the way Native nations connect to the new year by either making resolutions or taking a new look on the year. Thank you for joining us. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Also, thanks to Roman Garcia for sitting in today. And thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, anchor and producer of National Native News. And if you want to learn more about Native America Calling, you can visit us online, nativeamericacalling.com. We have a new website. Check it out. Look around. Leave us a comment. And you can also find the shows that are coming up next week. And you can also sign up for the newsletter. I'm Tara Gatewood, wishing you a wonderful rest of your day.
Sacred Wind Communications education nonprofit, Sacred Wind Community Connect, is a proud sponsor of this program. Sacred Wind provides high school and college scholarships and internet training to areas of the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico, where the parent company provides voice and broadband services. Sacred Wind believes that broadband technologies can reinforce Native cultures and offer other opportunities for self-determination. For more information, log on to sacredwindcommunications.com.
Native people are at high risk for serious flu complications. Pregnant women, young children, elders, and anyone with health conditions like diabetes and heart disease are especially vulnerable. Please get a yearly flu vaccine. Your flu vaccine protects me. My flu vaccine protects you. Together, let's protect the circle of life. Learn more. Call 1-800-232-4636 or visit cdc.gov/flu.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.